Support for the Capital Connection comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Michael Mulgrew, President of the United Federation of Teachers in New York. Michael is the fifth president of the United Federation of Teachers, which represents nearly 200,000 New York City public school educators and school-related professionals, as well as child care providers, nurses, adult education instructors, retired members, and other titles and organizations. He's been president since July 2009. You can find out more about Michael and UFT at www.uft.org. Michael Mulgrew, welcome to the Capital Connection.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, there's lots to talk about. Now, one of the things, and Michael, you've been around a while, and I've been around a while, and we know about the tiers in the pension plan. And it seemed like with every tier came fewer and fewer benefits. And now we're at tier six, the legislature right now looking at pension sweeteners. From the United Federation of Teachers perspective, tell us a little bit about where you're coming from on Tier 6.
Well, Tier 6 is by far the nastiest tier that public employees have ever seen in the state of New York. And it was really propelled forward for really bad reasons. And as usual, the workers get stuck holding the bag. And now we're just saying we need to right this wrong. Tier six, you know, it was done at the end of the famous meltdown of Wall Street and the banks, and when they had to all be bailed out by the government, which means they had to be bailed out by the taxpayers. And there was a fear after the bailout that our economy would not recover for, you know, over a decade. And the fear became that the only way to keep the public pension solvent would be to raise contributions by taxing, specifically taxing the rich. So what did the rich people do? They all got together and said, we're going to run a campaign to create a new tier so we don't have to, so they won't be able to tax us to keep their current pension tier. Well, that was all a fabricated lie and none of it came true. And now we have seen some really negative effects on Tier 6 now that it's 14 years old, which is local governments are paying now more than they've ever paid for pensions, and workers are paying more out of pocket than ever, you know, triple the amount minimally of workers that came before them, and for no reason, because the pensions were fine then. They continued to be fine throughout the recovery of the recession. And now they're pushing past points of they're going to be overfunded. So we think we need to right this wrong and stop making local governments and workers pay money that's just not necessary.
How do we fix it?
Well, you can't fix it through a traditional method. The traditional method is this group of folks known as actuaries will come together and come up and say, this is what it will cost. But they don't have to look at anything except what would the tier have created in revenue for their pension system. Thing is, the pension systems don't need this much revenue in order to stay solvent and be in good shape. So this is going to require real political will to say, we need to take a look at this. We know that people and local governments are overpaying into the pension system and say, we need to come up with some sort of reset of all the different pensions because there's way too much money going into them now. But it's never been done that way at the state level. And, you know, everyone is petrified because the actuaries are saying, no, our job is to tell you what it would cost for us to get all the money that would have been produced under Tier 6. Thing is, there's way too much money being produced by Tier 6 from local governments and workers. So this is really a conundrum because people are trying to hide behind the way it was always done, but we've never had a pension tier that went overboard and so aggressively against workers and local governments.
So as you sit there right now and the legislature in high negotiations over this, what do you predict if you're looking into your political crystal ball here?
they all know something has to be done. There's no doubt about that. All the leaders have publicly said this can't continue because it is having an absolute negative effect on the ability to staff all of the public sector agencies. They're all having massive staffing problems. So we have that issue. And then we're having things we've never had before, which are retention problems. Usually when people work 5 years, they will stay and continue until they can achieve their pension. Now the pension is so hard to achieve, they're just leaving it. We have a much higher number of people leaving after 5 years. They're just throwing their hands up and saying, no way, I'm not doing this. So there is a recognition that something has to be done. The real question here, the crystal ball is opaque and cloudy on this issue is there a political will to say, we're not going to do this the normal way because the normal way that we've done this in the past just doesn't apply here? Because if you're just going to say that we're going to continue to have all of this revenue being produced either by local governments and workers or somebody else when it's not necessary, to me, that's just bad decision-making and lacking political will. That's the part that's cloudy right now. Doing something, every one of these has to be done.
Michael Mulgrew, president of the United Federation of Teachers in New York, joining us on the Capital Connection this week. Michael, do you know where the comptroller is on this whole issue?
Well, Comptroller DiNapoli was one of the most ardent, outspoken people 14 years ago, telling everyone there is no reason to do a pension tier. None. And he said, our pensions are fine. This should not be the time. You do not make decisions in the middle of economic crisis. You wait, because when you're talking about keeping a pension solvent, you have to look at numbers for 20 or 30 years. So he was an ardent supporter of not doing Tier 6, and now he has said something has to change. So what that is, you know, as controllers, both in the city and the state, they rely on their actuaries. Their actuaries, as I said before, it doesn't matter to them if local governments are paying more money than they should. That absolutely does not enter into their calculations. Their calculations are based solely on Tier 6 has all of these provisions, and those provisions are supposed to create this much revenue for us to put into the pension system itself. So as far as the actuaries are concerned, and these are the people who work with the controllers, somebody has to pay all of that revenue. And again, to an actuary, it's completely irrelevant if the money is necessary or not necessary. It's that the tier says this is what it's supposed to produce. And that's where it's going to get ugly.
Well, Michael Mulgrew, you seem to be explaining this pretty simply. And if you were to give it an image, it would be, to me, dropping a pebble in the water and the ripple effects, you know, end up down at the localities. And that's just going to come right back up the chain in protest.
You got it. It's exactly what's going to happen. So we're saying we want, you know, in all of our meetings, and we've met with all the leaders, we're saying the question isn't how much. The question is it needed? It's not how much Tier 6 was supposed to produce. It's how much is needed to keep the pension solvent. New York is one of the leaders in defined benefit pensions. Our laws protect the pensions. Unlike most states, our pension systems are looked upon as the best. I mean, it's just us in California. That's it. And we're very proud of that. But we can't allow our past history to dictate the fact that a bad decision is being made here. You know, and local governments are dealing with enough problems right now, the main one being health care, right? But local governments are dealing with all sorts of different issues. Paying money that is not necessary really should be something that is up to our state legislature and the executive to say, all right, if we're doing something we shouldn't be doing, putting a burden on local governments, we need to look to pull that back.
We are speaking with Michael Mulgrew, president of the United Federation of Teachers of New York. Now, Michael, I want to shift gears a bit and turn to the, quote, changes needed in the foundation aid education formula. Now, again, we've been around a while. There was the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. They sued the state and won. They won the lawsuit, which said you've got to provide a quality, equitable education, and you've got to put the money in. I let you take it from there.
Well, until this governor, foundation aid was never fully funded. And you have to give our governor full credit. She said, this is our obligation. This is our responsibility. The courts have ruled, and we need to fully fund foundation aid. And she was the first governor to do that. The irony is, we're going back to the recession. When the court case was originally settled, and the court ordered the state that they had to rectify what they were doing because it was wrong, that's when the recession hit. So I remember that conversation with then Governor Patterson, and he's like, whatever the amount is, it doesn't matter. We don't have the money. And he wasn't wrong at that moment. But since then, you know, the governor, Cuomo, never fully funded it, and he didn't like the idea that he was being ordered to fund it. Governor Hochul came in and said, this is our obligation. We need to do it. But at the same time, that court case has been going on so long, the demographics of the students that we serve in the state, specifically in the cities, has changed dramatically. And the court case says we should be looking at what are the actual costs for all the students we need to serve. So what we're in a debate about now is what is known as the formula for foundation aid. So we've been recommending for years there has to be changes. We have many more children in homeless situations now, or temporary housing, whatever you want to call it. It's children and their families who are in really difficult situations. We have many more students who are English language learners and new to this country. And we love them. We welcome them with open arms. But, you know, say in New York City, we have over 200 different languages being spoken. And when you're dealing with not just learning the new language, but learning how to feel comfortable and safe in a new country and environment, that's a big deal. And we take on that responsibility very seriously. These things cost more to a school system. So last year, we had recommendations of different parts of the formula to be changed. And we're happy that they did start the changes, but they only picked one. And they picked one, a very important one, children in poverty. Well, sad to say, we have more children in poverty across the entire state than we did 15 years ago. Income inequality is growing, we know, at rates no one has ever seen or even imagined. And that's having a profound effect upon, you know, millions of families. So we now have that piece added more money, but New York City continues to have the same percentage of children in poverty. We don't have any less. But the rest of the state has more. But you can't, the state should not have left out children who are dealing with temporary or homeless children in homeless situations. That is sad, very sad in the United States at this point in time that the number of children living in homeless situations is growing. And it's a real burden upon the family and that child. But we feel that it is our job to help these children succeed. But it does, we need more services to help those children succeed. So those services cost money. We have to deal with the fact that the other parts of the formula have to be changed this year. And that seems to be a big part of what we've been doing. The electeds from New York City understand that this budget has to have more of the changes that are necessary to help all children in these situations. So that's really something that we've been lobbying hard about.
Michael Mulgrew, president of UFT, that's United Federation of Teachers. And you may have said this in some of your comments, so forgive me if I missed it. But the idea that at the base of this funding formula is that the way the state funds the school is through the property tax system, which to me is already there's no equity there because you have poor sections of communities that don't have a solid home tax base. And so therefore, immediately, they're going to be haves and have-nots. So what about that part of it? Why aren't we funding it either directly a school's fund out of the budget or out of the general fund rather than taking it from the property taxes?
You know, and these are the questions that all our state legislature should look at. You know, New York City does it through its local taxes. It doesn't do it through property tax. But the majority of the state, overwhelming majority of the state, does it through property taxes, which automatically means there will be haves and have-nots. You know, and this is why, you know, you can't just say, well, that's the way it is. It's the same situation we're dealing with the Tier 6 with the pension. Well, that's just the way it is. That's the way we've always done it. Yeah, but the world has changed, and right now we know that that's not the smart way to do it. So if you're going to say, well, that's the way it is, and you know it's not the smart way to do it, then you're kind of like trying to, you know, shirk some responsibility and say, all right, we have to look at things. We know change is hard, and, you know, the political debate at this point in time anywhere in our country gets very ugly when you're talking about any sort of change. But that's what you get elected to do. And we have to start looking at all of this in terms of what are we doing in terms of making sure that all children have a fair share and a fair shot and making sure they have a great life. Because that's all we do. as educators. It doesn't, you know, any child who walks into our classrooms, myself as a teacher, any child who walked into my classroom, and I taught mainly at-risk children, the only goal we're trying to accomplish is let's give them the ability to have a shot at really having a good life. That's all we want. And we're going to fight with anyone who doesn't understand that, you know, it's part of government's job to do that. And education is a state-based system. And remember, our government, our federal government can support education, but they have no control over education. It's a state-based system.
Yeah, and it seems like, since you mentioned it on the federal level, that Ms. McMahon is on her way to basically dismantling the department.
Yeah, and, you know, there are parts of the department, the U.S. Department of Education, that, you know, we've had issues with. But overall, the reason, you know, taking care of Title I, in other words, the federal government has a role in helping states overcome. This goes back to your question about how do we do it as a state. The federal government, under President Johnson, way back then, the irony is he taught. He was a first grade teacher for 1 year of his life in West Texas, and he understood there was no way that a school or a teacher on their own could overcome poverty that he was seeing inside of his classroom. He knew there had to be additional help for children in poverty, which is why Title I program was one of his signature programs, that the federal government was going to help states overcome the challenge of children in poverty. And that is a positive role for the federal government. When the federal government starts trying to enact policies and tie them into what I call enticement policies, we're not telling you what to do because we know we're not allowed to, but if you want any money from the federal government, you're going to do what we ask. You know, we call those as enticement. You could also call them blackmail.
Right.
But, you know, but making sure that civil rights are being upheld in schools. And what the federal government saying, we can, if a state is not doing its job properly under that we will intervene. Those are the really important things, especially when it comes to children with special needs. You know, that's a big issue where the federal government has intervened all across this country at different times, where children with special needs were not being supported properly. You know, and that's a good thing that the federal government did it. But overall, you know, now it's just dismantle. You know, and as a state, we're looking at massive cuts in Medicaid, right?
Right.
Which we know will affect education.
Yep.
You know, and the federal government's position here is, no, we're not getting rid of Medicaid. We're just telling the state to pay for it. What are you, nuts? But at least it's affecting all states, blue and red. I don't think the federal government or this administration at the national level realized how many people are relying on Medicaid for them to actually live their lives in a minimal way. So we'll see where that fight goes.
Yeah, again, we're back to that ripple effect.
Yes.
We're speaking with Michael Mulgrew. He is the president of the United Federation of Teachers. You can find out more at uft.org. The debate over reopening the state class size law. Now, class size is an important debate, right? I mean, I see it at the higher education level in my SUNY class. The smaller the class, the more connection you can make oftentimes, the easier the learning becomes. But at the same time, there's only so much we can do in public education. Let's talk about class size and the law, which I guess what was from 2022 and centers on the requirement for New York City public schools to cap class sizes at 20 to 25 students with full compliance by 2027-28.
Yep. You know, in terms of this debate at this point, look, we've hit every mark we were supposed to meet. And I want to be clear, this administration in the city, Mayor Mondani and our chancellor have come out very publicly and said, we support the class size law. What their conversations with us is like, we don't know if we can get to that 100% by the time we're supposed to be there. And our response to that is, well, there's certain things we haven't done yet that are required by the law, like the capital program, in other words, building of schools and space. That has not been addressed at all by the city of New York. So we're like, well, first, let's put that in place. So we've already hit our 60%, and we've had schools. Last year, we had hundreds of schools submitted plans to come into compliance, and they were all funded. And the state is doing its part. The state said it will fund it, and the state has been funding it. So we have those things in place. But what we've said to the city at this point and to the chancellor is, well, we hear you might want an extension, but we want to understand why at this point. There's great flexibility in the law. There are exemptions that can be granted to schools and districts in terms of whether they have, whether it's going to take 3 to 5 years to build a school, then we can give certain schools exemptions at that point. So we have the flexibility built in, and then those schools will not be counted in terms of compliance. So what we have, so last year, over 700 schools submitted plans. They were funded, and that's what allowed us to reach our 60%. This year, we've done the same process, and even though that the results of those plans have not been made public, what I've been informed is that just on these plans alone, we'll go between 75 and 80%. And that's before we've granted any additional exemption. So our first thing is, let's look at all the data. And if we can get to 80%, which I believe we can from what I've been informed and Mike and the UFT team has told us, if we can get to 80%, let's do the 80% for this year. And then let's look at the last piece, the 80 to 100. But we need a capital plan. In other words, how many schools actually need more of a very, a real construction project where you're building an annex? We're not talking about putting up a wall to split rooms in order to make multiple classrooms in space that's not being utilized. We're talking about an annex, or that we just have to build another school completely in a neighborhood, and that's the only way for us to come into compliance. So I want to deal with the facts versus this, oh, we think we're going to have a problem. Well, that's nice, but I don't think we will, because the data is showing us it won't. So we're willing to work with this, but we have to do it based off of the facts, not based off of conjecture.
Michael Mulgrew from United Federation of Teachers. I'm wondering about, and I'm wondering if you even know or have been hearing about, how the cell phone ban in the schools is doing. We've heard anecdotally, certainly, that there have been some positives. We've also heard anecdotally that some students have done some workarounds, handed in fake phones and got their real one in. But
yeah. But
the distraction from learning, which has been just such a huge issue in schools, what are you hearing?
It's been an overwhelming success in the city and across the state, and the whole country was looking at us in August. The number of inquiries, everything. New York State is doing a cell phone ban in their schools. How is this going to work? It's never going to work. New York City, with all those students, it's never going to work. It's working, and it's working to a high degree. Yes, and students try workarounds, okay? And
shocking.
I want every adult to remember what they did in high school or middle school.
That's right, yeah.
Students will do it. They're going to be creative. Thankfully, through social media, they kind of tell us what they're going to do.
Yeah, so right.
We can figure out a lot. But the real value here, after the first month, and it only took a month to really get this cemented in place. After the first month, we started hearing more and more from students like, I hated this idea, but now I'm happy it's here.
Yeah.
And you're seeing students really have conversations. And you see, and it was a big deal, like there was this debate, safety, and all of these other things. But we listened, we addressed those issues with parents, because those are our partners. And in the end, we all got together and did something really good on behalf of our students, because the damage that was being caused was severe. And just as an educator, I can go through all the other damage, the bullying, the stuff that people really know about. Their ability to remain focused on an issue was diminishing. And it was diminishing year by year because we were measuring it. It wasn't just us. It was a lot of people were measuring it. Adults who are addicted to their phones, they're done. They're screwed. I don't know what else to tell you. But hopefully we can have these students recognize the fact that, all right, this phone is, I like it, it's a tool, but it's a tool under my control, but I do recognize it's causing damage. And hopefully what we've done here in New York, because we're hearing it from our students, is, got them to address the fact that, all right, sometimes I need to put this thing down. And so many parents have asked us now, could you do a ban in my house? And we're like, no, right. That's up to you. That's for you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wish we had a little more time. We don't. Our guest has been Michael Mulgrew, president of the United Federation of Teachers in New York. You can find out more at uft.org. Michael, great talking to you about these important issues. I appreciate you joining us and hope you'll come back again.
I will. Thank you. And thoroughly, thank you for a very good conversation, because a lot of times it's a hit and miss. Give me the quote we need and they move. But this is what we need more in our society, is people actually having a little bit more depth and substance to conversations. I think we'll be better off for all of us.
Agreed.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.